Welcome to the Researcher Development Online podcast from the University of Warwick. Join me, Katie R. Mahoney, and Sue Johnston Wilder, where we talk maths anxiety for PhD researchers. Join us to find out what maths anxiety is and how you can help yourself overcome maths anxiety. Welcome to part three of our maths anxiety mini-series. I'm talking to Sue about maths anxiety, and we're now going to be talking about seeking help with maths anxiety. So Sue, if I want some help, or I see myself as feeling anxious or worried about doing maths in my PhD or my life generally, what can I do? Where can I seek that help, and what models are there that can help me?
Hi. Well, we've talked about the hand model of the brain, and there's a video we can give a link to for people to watch that, which is really about explaining why you feel stupid in the face of maths, and it's based on people's prior experiences. So that's one model that really can help people feel that if they calm down, they can tackle maths. And then we mentioned the ladder model, that you have to imagine asking for more rungs if something is too big a reach from where you are now. And that's inspired by watching my daughter learn to climb after she was recovering from breaking her back. And so she had to start with quite small steps, and now she can do quite big ones. The third tool is the growth zone model, we call it. It turns out that it's known by other names like the learning zone model or the comfort stretch panic model that coaches use. But if you imagine, and you'll have access to copies of this diagram, a comfort circle, my comfort zone, everybody knows what their comfort zone is, I suspect. Just outside the comfort zone, where you're a bit out of depth and you're learning something new and you have support from the people around you, take risks and do rough work, if you like. And then there's the zone that's out of your depth, which is perceived as life-threatening by your brain, which is the one that triggers your hand into panic, or your brain into panic. So comfort, growth, anxiety. And it's about learning to recognize which of those zones you're in. Learn to recognize what they are and how you're in which one. If you can't think straight, you're in your red zone. And the fourth tool is based in what I might call micromindfulness. It's just learning how to calm down from that place of anxiety, to take yourself away from the threat. And there's a lovely book called The Relaxation Response by Herbert Benson, who I think of as the father of bringing mindfulness into schools. And one of the simplest strategies is to do 5-7 breathing. Breathe in for 5, out for 7. And that triggers the parasympathetic nervous system, which is the rest and digest system in our brains. If that doesn't work for you, you can think, what can I hear? And list 6 things you can hear. Or you can go for a walk or have something to eat. So those are processes that take our brain from the panic space to the calm down space. And then we can start tackling the maths, provided the steps are about the right size. How does that feel?
That sounds like some really great advice there. The idea of just taking a breath, walking away and going doing something else, just to give your mind chance to take a moment to reflect and to go and do something else to calm down. That sounds like some really good advice.
Then when you calm down, you need to thrive in the growth zone. And that might require finding some new resources on the internet, or it might mean finding a partner to work with, or finding a very safe safe tutor, or someone you can explore the idea with, so that you feel supported. Because if you imagine being out of your depth but not panicking, you would need somebody there to make sure that you didn't kind of gasp and go out of your depth and get panicked by too much water. And so you need to find these resources in the growth zone that will support you. So recruit support.
Yeah. I'm just again thinking about, you know, if you were swimming and that you notice that you're out of your depth, but you stay calm and look for some help, or, you know, ask someone to throw you afloat, then you can either get back to where you feel comfortable, or you might feel comfortable enough to stay in that out of depth zone because you've got the right support there. And I think perhaps some of my learned behavior is, I'm out of my depth. Well, that's it. I'm just going to do paddling from now on. I'm never going to go, you know, above my waist again.
Absolutely. And don't we totally understand that your survival mechanism is keeping you safe?
Yeah.
And what it's interesting about Hanny's story, he's a PhD student that I worked with, and we've written his story up so people can read it. And part of him felt exactly like that. So he chose to use qualitative methods right the way through his PhD. But part of him knew that he could do it if he had the right support. And so when he found me, he came to talk with me about his prior experiences of struggle and of being out of his depth. And we worked on it together. And then he could face the SPSS lectures and gosh, this is easy now. Now I've overcome that panic barrier and I'm back in my growth space. I can do this.
Yeah. And I completely empathize with Hanny. My PhD was a very qualitative approach to the research project and the research topic.
So the thing is, it's not wrong to have a purely qualitative PhD. What we're trying to say to the students is don't avoid the stats because you don't feel able to tackle it. If it's part of telling your story, let's get some stats in there and let's find the support for you that ensures that you go away knowing that if you ever have to use stats, you'd be able to overcome that emotional barrier, that handbrake that says, I can't do it.
Yeah, and recognizing that, you know, why people do that, the PhD is already in your growth zone, potentially. And so you're already stretching and you've moved out of your comfort zone into that growth zone. And for some, the idea of moving to do some stats might just have pushed them over the edge, but with the right support could help them back into the growth zone and to help people use stats where they need to and where they could and where it would complement their qualitative studies as well.
But that's very different from being a maths person. So a maths person might be somebody who specialises in maths and finds difficult maths challenging and exciting, just for its own sake. What we're talking about here is ordinary PhD students who are confident users of maths or stats and who are prepared to learn more if they need it, but are not specialists. They're just using the language of stats as part of their storytelling.
Yeah. So that's a good thing to remember, that we can all learn to use the language and we can all learn to use those techniques. We don't have to be specialists in order to use them.
But my real advice is to wait until you've got your own data. Because the thing is, if you have your own data, you know in your heart what the story is you're trying to tell, like, 3/4 of these people were women and 1/4 were men, or whatever it is that you've got as part of your story, then when you try and come to illustrate those parts of the story with pictures and graphs, they will be more meaningful to you because the meaning and the knowledge you have of the data will help provide the steps in the ladder that make sense of the numbers.
Brilliant. It's a great advice. Use the data that you already love to help you with the stats and with the representation. Fantastic. Mm-hmm. So any other go-to places? You've got some book recommendations. Are there any websites or anything else that you can think of that might be a good
The book we gave Hanny was Developing Your Thinking in Statistics, which was actually written by a team at the Open University to help adults who were asked to teach stats and maths to year 7 to 9. And the key message is that you're already statistically thinking. Whether you're thinking about the price that changes when you go to buy a new product and you suddenly, it's more than it was last time, you're using information that's number-based to make decisions. And when you look at offers in the shop, you know, 3 for £3 or whatever, and you're using that data all the time when you're looking at how well somebody's running or how the football teams are doing. And so we have to think of ourselves as all emergent users of statistics and data, and not to feel put off by people who would not be able to communicate to what we've learned so far. But yes, there are a range of books we can send out to people, but I do think it's worth asking for a coach for mathematical resilience or statistical resilience until we get enough people who understand what we're trying to share here.
Thank you, Sue. So we've been talking about seeking help with maths anxiety. Thank you.